back to school time for a lot of students. And I mean, I think for some parents, they breathe a sigh of relief if their kid didn't get in any trouble in the summer. Hey, we pivot to the fall. The school gets to take care of them now. They're okay. There's still a lot of potential pitfalls for kids these days, aren't there?
Oh, there absolutely are. I think parents think that, great, their kid is back in school, so now it's back to routine, less monitoring them. But there's a lot of things that parents still have to be aware, and schools obviously have to be aware. A lot of kids get Chromebooks or other things for school, so it's important to start teaching or reminding your kids that just because they're in school or they have school electronics, they still have to have internet safety and computer safety for them as well as their friends.
Is this the biggest area of change from when we were in school till now, is the cell phones and the laptops and what happens on those?
Absolutely. I think kids have everything. I mean, even if you can't have a phone, kids now have smartwatches. Nobody had that when we were young, and it was just paper and pen, word of mouth, and that's it. But now everyone can figure out where they are. I mean, back in the olden days, you took regular pictures that were printed out. Now right. You take a snap, it has all of your data.
Right.
Exactly pinpointing where you are, the date and time. A lot of people can access that if they know how.
Right. So you're talking about just being safe in terms of making sure other people don't get your data, similar to what adults have to go through too.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Definitely. So parents and schools need to be teaching their kids about safety when they're going online. I know a lot of kids, obviously, over the summer still had their electronics and they were playing Roblox and all these other with people that they thought were friends or that became friends, but they still have to be wary of making sure who their friends are, who they're playing with, who they're communicating through all their electronics.
I can't believe how much my niece and nephews want to just watch YouTube. That's what they always ask. And their mom and dad smartly remind me, even when I'm babysitting, that that is a no-go unless I'm right there next to them. I mean, that really is a minefield, just even them being able to fiddle around on YouTube, isn't it?
Definitely. You can watch YouTube, but then there's so many ways that other people communicate, or you like it, or you can subscribe to it, and then that information could possibly get sold off to other people. So all these things that your kids do innocently could have difficult consequences in the future.
A lot of things that kids do innocently can also touch into illegal activity. And I mean, I'll just say people sending photos back and forth to each other or to friends. That is a dangerous game to play. I know there's a lot of pressure on kids to do certain things. And I'm not only just talking about ones in certain graphic nature, but just anything. I mean, like, really, there's such a digital footprint now that didn't exist when we were in school. I mean, even pictures of maybe their buddies drinking or something like that. There are a lot of things that can be sent that are no good.
Right. Or that could be a photograph that was taken innocently, but when you look back on it, it can be misinterpreted. And then these kids, they don't realize it could affect them for their future. So if you're an athlete and you posted something of you're holding up a red Solo cup, mm-hmm. it may be filled with lemonade, but that's not the impression that the internet may get or your coaches may get. Or if you're going to education, university, sporting things after high school, that could affect you. Or if could take away your scholarship, or you could be benched in high school for playing because they think that you're doing something inappropriate.
What about pictures of a more explicit nature that are sent between, you know, I don't know, a boyfriend and a girlfriend or something? Shouldn't be doing it. I know we should be having conversations, but we know it happens. And then someone else gets a hand on them in ways they shouldn't. I mean, this is where we get into a real trouble area for some kids, even if they're under the age of 18, right?
Right. And so I don't think people realize that this happens all the time, and it can be innocently, and someone can get a copy of the photograph without people even realizing it. It's not necessarily just because a couple breaks up, mm-hmm. teenage couple breaks up, and then one is jealous and doing it for revenge to send it to the next person or to humiliate them or to get them to do something. It could just be innocently. You're on a school bus, you're in class, you're in study hall, you're waiting for a ride, and some other kid walks past without you realizing and snaps a picture of you holding your phone with that picture on it, and then that kid sends it. That happens a lot too. So I think kids need to be aware that even if you truly trust the other person, there are others around you that perhaps will not. And even though you really trust someone, if something happens and you break up or there's someone else that's trying to break you up, they can get copies of those pictures and it can be very embarrassing for you, your brothers and sisters, your family. It's difficult. It affects your school and how you are mentally.
Can it be illegal too, even if you're under the age of 18?
Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, even though people think, well, if I'm having a photograph, I'm 15 and I have a naked or inappropriate picture of another 15-year-old, that's age appropriate. not all prosecutors look at it that way. Mm. You could still have a 15-year-old charged with possession of child pornography or distribution or manufacturing or anything, even though it's a photograph of a student, another teenager.
Of the same age, right?
Correct.
Exactly. And I know this is kind of a territory that makes people squirm a little bit, but it's important to have that conversation. How do you have that conversation with a kid? I guess you're not, I didn't bring you here to be a parenting expert, but since you have a kid who's growing up, not quite at the teenage age yet, but approaching it, I mean, is it just a matter of maybe letting someone else have that conversation with the kid? I don't know. How do you navigate that?
Right. It is really hard to talk to other parents, other adults. It's uncomfortable for everyone. Your kid is mortified. You're just as mortified. But you know what? You have to sit down and you have to have an uncomfortable time, whether it's going for a walk in the park, a car ride, sitting in the backyard, on the porch, just in front of the TV during a commercial break where you hit pause. You just have to say and explain, like, you trust your child, but your child should know and make sure. You can also phrase it that you're teaching your child so that they can tell their friends. Because what if their friends' parents or guardians or grandparents aren't telling your friends?
Mm-hmm.
They want to make sure that their friends are protected and know that nothing can happen to them.
Okay, this is going to be a lot of scenarios that people can't even believe is a real thing. Let's say their kid is now a senior in high school. They have an early birthday. They're turning 18. Their girlfriend or boyfriend is a junior or a sophomore. We see this all the time. They're 16 years old, 17 years old, 15 years old, whatever it is. Things that we would like have never thought were an issue when we were growing up, right? The 2 or 3 years. And a lot of students date within that range. When that older person turns 18, there is like a new realm of laws that they need to be aware of, right?
Right. Because even though you're 18, if you're still in high school, you're still going to be dating probably a high school student.
Right.
But when you're 18, legally, you're under the adult laws. So if you have a relationship with a freshman or a sophomore, so 14, 15, and the parents of that 14 and 15-year-old find out and they're not a fan, right, you can be criminally charged. And even if the prosecutor isn't going to charge you criminally with something, the parents could still try to file a lawsuit or obtain an order of protection. These orders of protection parents are getting all the time now, and they could ban you from school. So if you're an athlete or just a straight-A student and you have an order of protection that you can't attend that school or the school district, then you go to an alternative school. How does that affect your future or your senior year of high school?
Okay, I just don't want to scare people because this is a very common scenario. Does this happen a lot?
It's frequent.
Okay.
It is frequent, but probably out of all the relationships that are occurring, you know, the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of kids
right.
that are dating, it's probably a small fraction. But I think knowledge is power. You have to make sure your kid is aware that this could happen.
Is it maybe also parents, if your kid's 18 and they're dating someone who's 16, these parents should know each other. They should have conversations. They should at least, you know, have some sort of cordial relationship between the families so that everyone's on the same page and knows at least what's happening, right?
Right. That's very true. A lot of times it's parents that don't know each other. And so then a parent finds out through a third party, perhaps, or accidentally stumbling upon photographs on their child's phone. And that's when they learn that they're in this relationship with an 18-year-old. So I think that's the problem, too. So it's important, even though it's difficult, to try to have a good relationship with your child or at least open lines of communication.
For sure. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions for Audrey Anderson. Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. We, in the first half hour, talked about what seems like common sense, but just to remind kids about, oh, digital safety, pictures on their phones that shouldn't be there. And boy, in my head, I just think that most prosecutors are just going to, you know, if it's two kids or 15 years old, they do something stupid, okay. But Audrey, there are prosecutors out there that will charge kids with crimes, even if they're juvenile crimes that can mess up their future. So have uncomfortable conversations is probably the biggest lesson from the first half hour if someone missed it, right?
Right, definitely. And then obviously make sure your kids don't share personal information, including like they're home alone because mom and dad or grandma and grandpa are at work or something like that too.
Yeah. I guess also just like, and I know it's easier said than done, just have those open lines of communication and have those uncomfortable conversations. So if something does happen, where something squirrely happens with a phone or something like that, the kid will feel as comfortable as possible coming to a parent and letting them know what happened. Because at that point, if a kid can recognize that this could be trouble, getting someone like you in their corner can help them out earlier, better than later.
Right. Absolutely. And if you don't necessarily have the best relationship with your child, you can see if there's another adult in their life that they have a good relationship, an aunt, an uncle, or maybe a coach, nurse, something at school that they can always say that something's happened to them, or if they see something happening to another child.
Right, for sure. Let's talk about corporal punishment in schools, which seems like a conversation from, oh, I don't know, 50 years ago, Audrey Anderson. I was kind of surprised to hear that Illinois has banned corporal punishment in school. And I guess I'm surprised by that because I'm surprised that it hadn't been already. What do you know about this?
Right. I thought it was interesting, too. So apparently, Governor Pritzker did sign a bill that's effective in January of 2025. And this bill targets private schools. So 30 years ago, which doesn't seem like the 90s were 30 years ago, but 30 years ago, 1994, there was a ban for corporal punishment in public schools.
Okay.
But private schools apparently were not touched. So
let's just make sure we are at the definitions. Yes. Corporal punishment, we're talking about any physical punishment to a child for acting up.
Correct. So it could be the paddle or a ruler. I don't think people do paddles anymore, but you never know the private school.
This is reminding me of like Blues Brothers. Like, this is reminding me of, well, I won't say the animal name that they call the nun, but because I think that's offensive. But
yes.
Okay, so, all right, so as of right now, it's still legal until January 2025.
For private schools, correct.
Are we the last one to do that?
No, surprisingly, we're only the fifth state.
Only five states will have now banned corporal punishment in schools.
Correct.
So 45 other states out there, it's on the books, still allowed
correct
to do it.
Yes, in some states like North Carolina, it's not required. It's not banned. However, all the school districts have signed on that they're not going to be using corporal punishment.
Okay.
And some other ones like New York, I think they just banned it in private schools just last year in 2023. New Jersey banned, I think it was a long time ago. Actually, in 1867, I actually did a little research. New Jersey in 1867 banned corporal punishment for public and private schools.
So they were 160 years ahead of us, New Jersey.
Yes.
Good for them. Okay, I shouldn't laugh at this but I almost just wonder if it's good that these laws now are being written. I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe listeners correct me if I'm wrong. You guys often do, thankfully. Most private schools probably are not using corporal punishment or have already outlawed it kind of internally, right?
Right. I presume if you look in the handbook, I don't think it says in there that corporal punishment, a paddle or a ruler to the hand or something like that is anywhere in their discipline.
Right.
Correct. Most likely it's probably. I think it's just a catch-all. It's my understanding that supporters like the American Association of Pediatrics was just saying it's detrimental. And other organizations were saying it was used on African-American boys as well as those with disabilities more often than any other group of students. So it was too prejudicial. So they wanted to make sure that those two groups were not unfairly targeted.
Mm, okay. So by making a state law ban, you kind of just make sure that none of these things are happening.
Right.
I'm kind of curious out there. I mean, I went to public school, so I have no record of this, but I'm sure there's listeners out there that got the ruler or the paddle at some point.
Oh, I'm sure that there were closets or the principal's office or some person that they were sent to and they knew. I'm sure it was a progressive thing, I
yes
presume. I know some states, I think it was Missouri, that it was banned, prohibited, but then a few years ago, it was up to the parents. They can allow it. So if they chose to have the school use corporal punishment, that was acceptable.
So while I was going home asking for my parents' signature to go on a field trip, some schools in Missouri were saying, well, have your parents sign this letter if we can hit you with a ruler.
Yes. I know.
I shouldn't laugh. I really shouldn't laugh. Mm-hmm. It just seems so outdated.
Yeah. And other ways I think that people can also think of corporal punishment are for athletes, having them run laps or miles to exhaustion in the extreme heat.
I didn't think about that.
Numerous sit-ups or push-ups or something to exhaustion to punish that one particular athlete for some bad behavior. That was something that they were addressing as well.
That falls under the realm of corporal punishment?
That's what people were thinking, that perhaps that could be a gray area they could possibly address as well.
Yeah, because that is something that even in public schools, I imagine, happens out there, or at least did. I didn't play any sports. I was in the marching band, although I had to do push-ups sometimes. As a punishment for messing something up. Never to exhaustion, though. But I imagine that still happens in a lot of sports, too. Okay, well, keep us posted on that. That seems crazy. I also wanted to talk with you just about suspensions and expulsions as kids go back to school. They happen. They are getting more serious and probably more frequently used. Am I correct in that?
That is correct. Numerous years ago, the laws changed through the school board that expulsions, you couldn't really debate it. You couldn't challenge it. But now it's not mandatory or not automatic for offenses. If you look in a lot of schools' handbooks, there's progressive discipline for suspension for a few days, or starts with detention in school, out of school, suspension, then suspension for 10 days, and then eventually expulsion for perhaps the remainder of the semester, depending if it's towards the end of the school year, a year or two.
And before, you really couldn't challenge it, but now you can?
Right. So it was an automatic expulsion. So now you have to have the opportunity, if you wish, the parents within a very short time to appeal it, and you can challenge the expulsion or even the suspension of your student.
Oh, wait. I think I understand. Before, it was a progressive system of punishments that led ultimately to expulsion. Now they can immediately go to expulsion if they want?
The opposite.
Okay, I messed that up. You okay? So it's getting better in terms of there's supposed to be a written down progression of what has gone wrong. If a kid gets suspended or expelled, in my mind, I'd be like, well, this isn't a criminal matter. This isn't going before a judge. Why would I want a lawyer to get involved? But you say there is benefits to getting lawyers involved.
There is, because if you're challenging the suspension or the expulsion, the school, they just don't have their principal or a dean to handle it. They have a private law firm that the school district contracts with.
Really?
So this law firm, all they do is represent schools in expulsions. Like the Chicago school systems, they have their own in-house attorneys that all they deal with are expulsion hearings of students.
Lawyers?
Yes, lawyers. They go to law school. They're on the bar. That's what they do.
That's what they chose to do. I shouldn't judge any lawyer on this show, particularly, but that's what they do. They work for the schools to make arguments. And I imagine that they want lawyers involved simply to cover their butts in all these circumstances, right?
Right. And so it's these hearings, you need an attorney, or you should have an attorney as well, because there's a policy, and no one really truly reads all the fine print for all the handbooks for the expulsion proceedings. But yeah, the school has an attorney. They know what arguments to make. You should have an attorney so that they can review everything with you, because a lot of times you get handed a stack of documents or a binder filled with documents 1 minute before the expulsion hearing occurs. So you've got to go through this as a parent and read everything about the specific policy that your child allegedly violated, their disciplinary hearing procedures, the evidence against them, bystanders reports from teachers and deans, and then you have to scan through this and then present your defense. And you have to do all this typically within 10 days or so of the incident happening. So it's hard for a parent to take in, but an attorney with experience can go through that or agree to extend the suspension to give you time to gather witnesses. Well, if you didn't have an attorney, how would you know that your child is entitled to those rights?
Wow. And who's the arbiter in these? Is it the school board as a whole voting usually?
Correct. So the school district has an attorney that they hire that takes notes and sometimes audio records it as well. And then they present that to the school board. And the school board in closed session reviews everything and makes a decision.
Interesting. So having a lawyer can help not only in the process of it, of understanding what your rights are, what's going to happen, how to poke holes perhaps in the argument, but it just helps in front of the school board to have that representation to put a professional face forward on behalf of the kid.
Definitely. And another benefit for having an attorney is that attorney to attorney, your student's attorney and the school's attorney can negotiate.
Oh, really? Okay.
And so that sometimes happens a lot. So if the school says they want a 2-year expulsion, well, you can maybe attempt to negotiate it to a semester
or something like that.
Or something like that, with other conditions such as maybe getting an evaluation, a threat assessment, or safety assessment. So that's something that an attorney would know, that a parent dealing with a school or attorney going from parent to school's attorney is difficult.
Okay. 630 has a question. Speaking of back to school, I read that Illinois has a law that the child has to be 14 to stay home alone. And we've talked about this. Is it not reasonable for a kid to be waiting for the bus 20 minutes or so for a mature 12 or 13-year-old? Is that illegal in Illinois for a kid to be home waiting for the bus for 20 minutes, 12 or 13?
That's actually really gray. So technically, there's part of the law, and I know we've discussed it before, but part of the law says if it's an innocent act where a reasonable person would believe that your child would be safe, such as waiting for a bus at a bus stop with other people, then that should be acceptable. However, if something significant happens to your child during that time, you may be charged criminally, or DCFS could swoop in and get involved as well. But correct, It's a gray area, but you should hopefully be safe with that. Okay. Unless it's maybe a 5-year-old sitting at the bus stop.
Right.
But yes, a 12-year-old in junior high should hopefully be okay.
Okay. Yeah. We talked about that discrepancy between the state law versus DCFS and what they're able to investigate and how that causes a lot of confusion. All right. Thank you very much, 630. Audrey, are those headphones working? We actually have a caller that has a question.
Oh, sure.
I don't know if you're able to hear me. Can you hear me? This is live radio. She knows how to work those headphones. All right. You are ready to go. Let's get Dennis on the line. Dennis, what's your question for Audrey?
My question was about extracurricular activities, such as sports and things like that. If there is an issue and you don't, they believe there could be a criminal case, but you know that isn't the case, can they take them off of any sport or what have you until that is...
Oh, I just dropped Dennis. I think what he's saying is, can they take your kid off the sports team if they think that there might be some criminal investigation going on? Are they at the discretion to do that, even if the criminal system hasn't played out?
Yes, unfortunately, a lot of times for the schools, they have a policy where they can do that. But if you have an attorney, perhaps, you can negotiate with the school for situations that they shouldn't be suspended or suspended from that sporting event. So it happens a lot, especially if the event occurred on school grounds. So the alleged criminal incident happened on school grounds, school property, or even if it wasn't at that particular school of your child, if it was like at an away game, something happened, mm-hmm. then yes, a lot of times the school will suspend or bench your child from that sport while the investigation is pending.
But if you have a lawyer, you could talk about negotiations through that or just have someone on your side.
Correct. To try to maybe speed up the process, at least with the prosecutor, and deal with the school for safety issues.
Okay. That's a great question. We appreciate it. All right. Good questions from our listeners today. I appreciate that too. Audrey Anderson, 630-877-5800. 630-877-5800 is how people can reach you. And you service the Chicago area, yeah?
I do, yes. Representing juveniles and adults in every imaginable situation, unfortunately.
You've changed your slogan from the old one that we used to say before.
Yes.
I think that's good. Any imaginable circumstance is a good way to put it. AndersonAA.com is where you can go for more. 630-877-5800. I always say, get out the contacts in your phone if you're a parent or a grandparent aunt or uncle. Put Audrey's number in there, 630-877-5800, so that when you're in one of those crazy moments, DCFS, something crazy happens, and all of a sudden the police are showing up at your door or DCFS's, call Audrey as soon as you can. She'll be able to help you out. Audrey, you help us out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you again.